2025.
So it is.
Welcome
to the future.
Meow, 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 meow. Meow, 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 meow.
I never thought we'd make it this far. We're a quarter of the way through the century.
I was reflecting yesterday on the fact that 2025 seemed like a long way off, you know, when I was younger.
Yeah, flying car way off, right?
Yes, exactly.
Hoverboards.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Lots of promises made by Hollywood that haven't quite been realised. Instead, it's all been about data. I thought it was going to be about floating. It turns out it's all about data.
And it's not about hovering, is it, or floating? Zero hovering. I've still yet to hover in my whole life. I assumed we'd all be drinking cuff tea.
Really? They've not managed that yet, have
Which
they?
Is lamb kofta and tea.
Lamb kofta and tea.
It's the Levantine Bovril, isn't it?
It's a hearty Levantine Bovril. Because it gives you, you get your caffeine kick, and you get your protein and fat.
Mm. The meat undergirding.
The meat undergirding that gets you through the morning.
Yeah. So yeah, we're recording this in 2024, so we haven't yet stepped out of our houses, like, seen all the hovering postmen, etc.
So for all we know, it's possible, isn't it? Because this is one of the possibilities that was talked about, that the millennium bug is actually exactly 25 years late.
Oh.
And will actually happen.
And the whole Earth will split open like an egg.
And what's inside? One of those Kinder toys. Whole thing was a Kinder egg all along.
It was a bloody Kinder egg. But the instructions are in Dutch. Oh, great. I haven't fully done my morning water. Sorry, you were witnessing my morning water earlier before we started.
Well, it's changed because it used to be the famous Henry Packer 2 pint glasses of water.
Yes.
Went down quickly. But now it's this weird thing where you very slowly drink out of a bottle of water.
Mm. Yeah, I'm doing it now still. Yeah, I drink one sort of large, one of the sort of semi-sized water bottles. 1 litre, I believe. Yes, I drink a litre.
Of Buxton?
It's Buxton in this instance. Yeah, it's got the semi-transparent Buxton cummerbund on the bottle, just slipping off a little bit.
Doesn't look like it's fresh out of the shop.
It doesn't, does it? No, I keep the bottle because of the environment, Mike. But it's too cold because normally I drink it with boiling water.
You know, we drink boiling water out of an old plastic water bottle.
Well, that's why the shape has subsided a bit.
And that's why there's so much plastic has been ingested over the years.
Yeah.
Mike has his head in his hands.
Yeah.
I think it means your innards are unsurvivable for tuna now.
I think so. What if a tuna ate me?
Well, or tried to live in.
Or tried to live in me. Mm. If I got eaten by Egg, the lost tortoise, I wouldn't go down well because of all the
It'd be a climate tragedy.
What's it called? Microfibers I've got in me.
Yeah, I wouldn't put it past you having a bit of fiberglass in there as well.
Well, it's a roughage, isn't it? It's all roughage. So I drink this cold water, but normally I pour boiling water in the top.
Why?
Because...
To warm it up?
Yeah, because ideally water, anything that goes into your body should be at body temperature, ideally. Shouldn't it? Otherwise, you're creating stress.
What a lot of work for yourself.
Well, you're creating molecule stress, aren't you? Your blood molecules are stressed. Your hermaphrodons. All the different elements in the blood. Hemoglobins. Your pancreatic amylase.
Yeah. Are you trying to get your body into a permanent state of sort of idling?
That's what it should... Well, that's how you want a car, isn't it? If you want to...
Not if you want to go anywhere. Yeah.
Well, you want it idling before you get in, don't you? So the engine's on, like everything's sort of operating at a low level. No, but like, I don't like creating stress on the way in because then, of course, your body, your tongue has to cool down the liquid. That's using energy. It's creating
your tongue.
It's increasing.
You'll rest a little espresso in a little tongue basin before you swallow it.
Well, the tongue is the water slide down into the.
Into the abyss.
It's the fun pool of the innards, isn't it? But Ben, you were asking me before whether I drink the hot boiling water and the cold water separately.
This is pre-recording.
This is pre-record.
Yeah, we were being quite baffled by what you were up to before you started recording. Yeah,
because that reminded me of an experience I had recently in a West End theatre.
Here we go.
Where you were trying to drink boiling water out of a kettle during the matinee?
Is that why they have bag checks for kettles in all West End theatres? Is that you?
I think the body should be at exactly the same temperature as the play. Ideally, it was Waiting for Godot, which operates between 14 and 17 degrees Fahrenheit. Yeah.
Oh, that's a terrible review of that. Poor Ben Whishaw, or whoever it was.
Does that mean it's really hot or really cold, that one? I can't remember.
Very cold. Very cold.
No, it was very, very good production. But it was in a classic old West End theatre, which have terrible, terrible toilets.
They
make you feel like you're an absolute Russian czar when you're sitting in the... there's this incredible, like, ornate beauty of the way the theatres are designed, isn't it? With, like, gold lap of luxury is the look.
Yeah. Mm.
But the toilets are absolutely, like, sub-caravan. They're really cramped and awful.
But the toilets were never built for the czars. None of those guys were going to the loo when they went to the theatre. The way they dressed, like it would have been, I mean, they're all wearing 18 different layers and accoutrements and accessories. There's no way they could be bothered. They would have starved and dehydrated themselves before any sort of public engagement.
Well, you just piss into your petticoats, don't you?
Yeah, exactly. That's the alternative if you're in a fix.
Yeah, that's why they call petticoats. Is it, you have a putty piss. You have a putty piss in your petticoat, don't you? And also, you'd have a man for a lot of this stuff anyway. Who'd be? Wouldn't you have a small?
Oh, yeah.
A small trouser operative who'd just be sort of down.
Piss factotum.
A piss factotum who'd just be down and taking care of it. You wouldn't really have to think about it.
Who lives in the petticoats?
Yeah, it was a layer of human admin, wasn't it, that was taken care of by a small bureaucrat. Who'd
That's where Rasputin started off, wasn't it?
That's where Rasputin started off. It was a real throwback because in this loo, the sink had the old thing you've only really, really see anymore, which is it had, rather than one tap, with a controllable temperature. It had two taps. It had a cold tap and a hot tap. Mm-hmm. Both, like, over a foot apart.
Yeah.
So you cannot get your head under both taps at the same time. It's impossible.
Well, if you're trying to do a quick interval scalp washing, if you've been absent mindedly drawing on your forehead in pen instead of listening to the play.
Look, we know I've got an unusually greasy head. Come on, we don't have to go over it. But... It just reminded me of how, and obviously one tap was piping hot and the other's absolutely freezing. Mm. I was yelping like a baby. People assumed I was just very moved by the play.
It's one of the things, isn't it, that Americans just can't believe. That's the thing they always talk about when they come to Britain, is that we have two taps and they just can't get their head around it.
I feel like it's quite rare because what two taps is asking you to do is to create a bowl of water to your specifications, temperature-wise.
Yeah.
But using and I don't think there's actually a word for that thing, the little plastic thing that goes in the plug hole. Is that? Because I tried to describe this to the person I went to the theatre with, and they couldn't understand what I was talking about. What's it called, that little thing that goes in?
The plug?
Oh, there you go, yeah. Yeah, the clue's in the word plug hole, isn't it? There was no plug.
Well, people nick them, don't they?
People nick them.
Of course they do.
People nick them.
There's no plug in a public sink.
Exactly. So they've taken the plugs out, but they've left you with this impossible situation, this impossible dilemma, which do I freeze my hands or do I boil my hands? I was genuinely yelping in pain.
But you do the thing where you like very quickly move them between the two. Like
you have to do the quick hand jive, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that'll pop a sock in it.
Or you pop a sock in your mouth to hide the screams. You just pop a sock in your mouth. Yeah. And just bloody deal with it. Yeah. Have those been phased out? Those, I think they have been phased out, haven't they? Those types of taps.
Well, when I moved house into this house, which is quite a new house, we don't have two taps anywhere, which I was quite sad about. Have you got two taps, Mike?
Yeah, we're single tap here.
I think single tap is the norm now. But I think it goes back to a previous era, which was the era of the freestanding bath. Everything was freestanding baths and bowls, which you filled up with water from the kettle or water from the lake, whatever. I don't know. But like, and that's what's happening. So that. The plug hole turns it into a bowl that you're filling up with water, and it was bowl-based.
A bowl-based culture.
Bowl-based culture.
Whereas we're now more shower, sieve, colander-based, aren't we?
Which is more hygienic, I would argue. Although I've had an absolute grind every morning to have another bloody shower.
Well, that's what we think. I mean, probably in like 30 years' time, someone will work out that's actually really dangerous, and we should be lolling around in our own swill, and that's the best thing for us.
Well, we should be doing the partridge wallow.
Exactly.
I've not wallowed now for
really?
Ages.
Do you not wallow anymore?
No, because I only did it because my shower was broken, and then we got a man to fix the shower, and since then I've not had a bath.
Oh, really?
And I realised I was kidding myself all along that I liked baths. It was just the only option open to me. Because given the choice, which I have every day, I just have a shower. My bath is now full of sort of dust and little weird bits.
Is it a separate... It's a separate bath unit, is it?
It's a separate bath unit, yeah.
Yeah.
It's now just full of weird bits. Don't even know what they are.
It will gather weight.
I'd hate to take them to a scientist and sort of work out what they're.
Maybe we could put it in the merch page, or sort of do a sort of weird bits. All. Nice.
A lot of it will be rat detritus, won't it? It'll be leftovers from rat volleyball sessions, rat fates.
Our listenership will now be the other side of Ratmus.
Oh, yeah.
Having experienced Ratmus. I just want to say thanks to everyone who sent us their Ratmus stories. Unfortunately, due to the way that scheduling works, I put a shout out on the podcast to say, send us your Ratmus stories. But then when we recorded Ratmus maybe 4 hours after that came out. So since then, we've had so many Ratmus stories that there's probably enough for like a sort of maybe like a midsummer Ratmus.
Maybe it could be Ratmus every day.
Oh, that's a good idea.
It'll get a bit annoying. I think by about June, having spent an hour discussing rat anecdotes every day, I think by June it'll start to feel a bit.
Well, unless it takes over, it might be a bit disappointing. It might be that we work out that's actually what people want.
But like, for example, I'm looking at the email account now. The top email in there, and I've not read the email, has the subject title header, The Rat Man of Plymouth.
I want to know that. I want to know the story.
We never read out The Rat Man of Plymouth.
Oh, come on. There needs to be more rat action.
We never read out toilet rats. We never read out soapy rat snacks.
Okay. We need.
I think there's going to be spring rats in there. There's a spring rat solstice or sort of the rat quinox. we'll need to introduce.
Yes, definitely rat quinox.
I think marking the big turning points in the year by just immersing yourself in stories about rats. It's just a really nice way, because we are part of a process. We are part of a planet, and a lot of it is absolutely barbarically disgusting and horrific, isn't it?
Should we read out rat stories at Stonehenge?
That's a nice idea.
I think that's a great idea.
I think there's just something nice about marking things with rats, isn't there? We've discovered.
Oh. It's because they're the ever-present.
They are the ever-present. They were there before us. They'll be there after us. They're the perfect.
Yeah, these eternal annual markings, and also King's birthday, that kind of stuff.
Generally, King's official birthday.
Big ones.
Yeah,
exactly.
All stand for the King! We're entering the Regal Zone. Regal Zone. Off with their heads! On with the show!
Listen not to the knaves and the shopkeepers!
Bring me more advisors.
The Regal Zone. Regal Zone.
Does the king, you know, the queen used to have two birthdays, that was a thing.
Yeah.
Does the king have two birthdays?
Oh, good
Why
question.
Did the queen have two birthdays?
Don't know. She had an actual birthday, which was the day she was born, although that was obviously she's a lizard, so she hatched. But
of course, yeah.
They said born.
Yeah.
And then she had an official birthday.
Yes, I don't think I've ever known the answer to that. I've definitely asked the question.
Yeah.
I don't think I've ever Googled it, though, maybe. Maybe that's the issue. Well, maybe we're not supposed to know.
Maybe they just want two birthdays.
Maybe that's above our pay grade.
Okay, so there is, I've looked it up. There is the king's official birthday.
Yeah.
Which is when?
It varies by region.
What?
So you've got different birthdays. So,
if he travels around the country, his birthday changes. So he can maximise the amount of presents he gets.
It seems like every different Commonwealth nation has a different official birthday for the monarch. So, for example, the king's birthday in Belize is in May.
Yeah.
However, on Norfolk Island, which I think is in the Pacific, it's the 8th of June. On calendar, it's the 4th of June. What's going on?
Is that so he can travel around and have multiple celebrations?
He's basically just having a sort of worldwide year-long birthday celebration.
Yeah. Cake and prezzies. I guess you would if you're a monarch, right?
You would.
So this official birthday thing happens in other countries. So, for example, in Luxembourg, there's the Grand Duke's official birthday. Yeah, in Belgium, there's the King's Feast. In Netherlands, there's Koningsdag. In Japan, they have the Emperor's birthday. And in North Korea, they have the Day of the Sun.
S-U-N.
Oh, S-U-N, yeah. Which is the
origin of all life.
It's when Kim Il-sung was born, who was the first, who's the sort of daddy.
And what did he do for Keir Starmer on his birthday?
He likes a quiet one these days, doesn't he? Pizza Express with the family.
Trip to Arsenal.
Yep.
Yep.
Have you ever seen Keir Starmer at Arsenal?
I haven't, no. He's been given a box, hasn't he, controversially?
Yeah, for free.
I don't find that particularly controversial.
No, it's not.
I mean, it's not at all.
Do you know what I mean? So I don't really... I'm quite happy for, like, absolutely, never mind assassins, but it, just for someone just to not sort of, like, throw a pint glass at him or just clonk him so he can get on with his work the next day. Do you know what I mean? I'm happy for him to have a break and I'm happy for him to not to be attacked.
100%. I think he should have a mobile.
Oh,
what's,
yeah?
What's a mobile?
Well, a Prime Minister mobile or a Starmer mobile.
Oh, I see.
I think that's where...
A Batmobile.
A Batmobile. I think that's where mobiles come into... Because there aren't, you know, there's only the Pope mobile. I think it's the only mobile that actually exists.
No. We know there is an active Batmobile.
Oh, there is an active Batmobile. Yeah, we've talked about
it. But there's room for a third one. You're right.
But I think it should be a Prime Minister mobile. So I think it should be based on his head, probably. Just gets a big version of his head. That's just simple...
Sort of translucent, are we talking? Yeah. So we can see him inside.
I think maybe the toilet section is opaque, Mike.
Okay, good idea. Lovely. This is where we differ. I don't have my eye on sort of these design details, you see. But yeah, you're thinking these things through.
Yeah, I think it should just be his head.
Yeah. Series of optional hats.
I think a series of optional hats, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So beanie.
Yeah. Tricorn.
And bicorn. Maybe even a monocorn. I think the glasses at the front are the windows. This is just simple.
Yeah.
So hang on. It's a glass Keir Starmer head on wheels. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. It might have to be reinforced glass. I think just glasses. We're asking for trouble, aren't we?
I think we're asking. You're almost safer outside of a glass version of your own head, I'd say. But I think the glass is at the front of the window, so he sits in one, wife or friend in the other.
Yeah.
Looking out of his own head. The whole thing's fiberglass.
Mm-hmm. Fiberglass, of course, being the safest material known to man?
I think so.
Yeah, okay. That's what POTUS's presidential beast is made of, is it, we assume?
Yeah. Yeah, the beast. I was about to mention the beast. Mm-hmm. Which is that's the official presidential car. It's called the Beast.
The POTUS Mobile.
And basically it's a car that you could fire a missile at and it would be fine.
Yeah, it would fire it straight back.
Yeah.
With interest. Back to the Starmer Mobile. I think it's a floating mobile. It floats around.
Okay.
You know,
how do you mean? Literally off the ground or like it's sort of amphibious, like a hovercraft?
Oh, good. I think, yeah, probably should be amphibious. I think it uses hover technology, which is now the norm now that it's 2025.
Yeah, okay.
And when he gets out of it, the mouth opens and a sort of metallic version of his tongue comes out, which is like a sort of ramp.
Yeah.
And he slides out of it, just wearing swimwear in a sort of rubber ring.
Okay. It's quite fun.
Yeah, so it's a bit of fun as well.
It's quite disarming at the G8, isn't it, when someone does that?
It's disarming.
Everyone else just gets out of a Jaguar or whatever. But
yeah.
Starmer's in water wings.
Yeah. But I do agree that, like, or generally the controversy about that stuff is a bit weird. It's the Prime Minister, his top job. He shouldn't. I don't want to see him on the Hammersmith and City line or whatever.
I sort of feel like if you're the Prime Minister, I wish Keir Starmer or any Prime Minister, when faced with these kind of questions, would just go, I'm the Prime Minister. Fuck off.
Have you seen what the guy in North Korea's got going?
Yeah.
Genuinely. I've tried saying, kill them. To various different assistants and aides around.
I've said it to David Lammy so many times.
David Lammy won't play ball.
I've tried different phrases. I said, exterminate him. Nothing happens. I've tried using different euphemisms.
You know what to do.
Maybe you could rid me of this problem permanently. Nothing happens.
Maybe it's time for the pigs to get fed, if you know what I mean. He's tried all the phrases.
He's even ordered in a hungry sow. He's got a sow in the back of number 10.
Yeah.
What's it doing there?
Yeah, and there's no... I imagine he's prodded all the different bookcases and stuff to see if there's secret passages. Yeah. There's none of that. I think you should be able to have like a Louis Vuitton hat made for you that looks like your body, but the other way around. So it looks like you're wearing yourself and people don't know which way around you are, if you want. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like the weirdest whim. You're the most powerful person.
That's the thing. I think in terms of like heads of state worldwide and also historically what heads of state have been like, even if you're just a bit of a maniac, you're still quite a long way off the worst we've had, you know?
Yes, that's true.
I want him to go hunting with a laser beam. Like, that's what I want to see them
for,
do.
For a snow leopard.
For a snow leopard, exactly.
A snow leopard that they've released and had released into Wolverhampton.
Exactly.
For yeah. their own convenience.
Just a bit of that. It would just give us a bit more, I don't know, something.
I think the Prime Minister should have this a separate train service.
Like Putin.
Called yeah. Ministerial Rail.
Nice.
Does Putin have his own train?
He's got his own train, yeah. And a train quite, line. Yeah,
it's an old Russian tradition. I think they do it in North Korea as well, don't they? You've got the Chechenian options as well. Nice sort of TikTok vids of you sort of shooting up land cruisers and things.
Hang on, is that what the president of Chechnya has been doing?
He's a big macho man, so he likes to people to know that he likes to spend his Saturday afternoons just shooting the crap out of stuff. In a wilderness somewhere.
I think I'm right in saying that he's the same guy who was brought on as a sub for the Chechnya national team in a football match.
Well, that's the kind of thing, again, as a prime minister, you might as well make the most.
That's what I mean. I love it.
Everyone just clears out of the way. Movie cameos.
Lovely.
In fact, in Waiting for the Godot the other day, he should be able to just walk on in the second half and go, you know what, I'm here. I actually am Godot. Now improvise around that, you
know what you're going to do.
Yeah, now what you're going to do. Wish or.
And then I'm going to bugger off. I'm going to do the weather at the news at 10.
Yeah, and I'm going to get it wrong on purpose rather than accidentally.
Say what I want it to be.
Yeah.
If it doesn't happen, heads are going to roll, literally.
Also, what better way to like announce getting rid of the winter fuel allowance than doing it on stage in the West End, you know, and people have been quite confused. Like, is this part of the play? Is this actually a policy initiative? Yeah. Just a bit of misinformation, a bit of confusion.
Bury the real news and a bit of excitement, a bit of intrigue.
I'm going to make myself the eighth course at the Fat Duck this weekend. You basically lick my hand with some chives on because I can. Yeah. Make the bloody most of it.
I'm also going to be third desk clarinet in the Bournemouth Symphony Orchestra. I've never played the clarinet in my life. Let's roll.
Or been to Bournemouth.
This is your captain speaking, Prime Minister Keir Starmer.
That's right. It's me, the Right Honourable Keir Starmer MP.
And you know what? I'm going to be locker number 59 in Ipswich Town Centre's Lido. Swimming pool.
Well, he's going to be the locker. Or he's going to be in the locker.
He's going to be the locker. So you've got to get all your clothes into him somehow, and your shoes.
Yeah, and all clothes from this point on will be in his size.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be two sizes: S for Starmer or XS.
Extra Starmer.
Extra Starmer. You can have two Big Macs and a Starmer Zone experience, please, which I have to order. And it just means that I have to eat a sachet of ketchup without taking it out of the sachet.
While being watched by a secret policeman.
Because it was decreed, yeah.
You stuck in a little Starmer impression there.
Oh, yeah, hello. Oh, policies. Oh.
It's not bad.
Yeah.
I do find his voice. I mean, I know it's not fair to criticise people's voice, but
I mean, that's something else, isn't it? Secret Police, why aren't you using your Starmer voice?
Why aren't you using
the decree is that we're all to use our Starmer voice.
Everyone has to do.
On a Thursday.
Yeah. It's important that everyone uses their Starmer voice. Ben, that's very good.
It's not bad at all.
That's actually much better. How do you do that? He's just got a way of speaking where he's really, it's really weird when you listen to it. It's like the pace of it is really strange. Like, he's always sort of telling you off.
Mm.
We have to remember. Bah, 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 bah. It's like that all
That's
the time.
That's so true. You've got to realise.
There we go.
There's a trot to it, isn't there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Bum, ba, bum, or a sort of heartbeaty type.
But also, there's a sense that he's got two quite ornate Japanese goldfish alive in his mouth. All right? And it's really stressful to keep them alive. It's a complex curse that was put on me when I was Attorney General.
Let's turn on the beam machine.
Yes, please.
This week's topic is sent in by Nick from Kent.
Hello, Nick.
Mike's least favourite county.
I've never said that before.
But the feeling is very much mutual with Kent, isn't it?
That's the impression I've been given.
Is the railway. Toot toot.
Toot toot indeed.
Toot toot.
Recently I was in London, Henry, and even though it's a 24-hour city...
Which it really is.
Soho. Battersea. Old Southwark. Streatham. Vauxhall. Tufnell Park.
Barnet, technically.
Madame Tussauds.
The Cenotaph.
Halfords. Zone 5.
Mind the gap between your provincial existence and this metropolitan utopia. Next stop, urban enlightenment.
The glamorous London life of Henry Bacher.
Hang on a second. Is that Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber? No, it can't be. Because you're Sir Andrew Lloyd Webber. I know.
it is a 24-hour city. It's absolutely there. Any time of the night, you go out and it's there. It's not open, but it's there, a lot of it.
Well, I was with you, Henry. We went to see Arsenal play Monaco.
That's true.
And then we went to the pub afterwards. And I looked at my Google Maps and I had to get back to Croydon, which is a long way away. And it said, oh, okay, as long as you leave on 11:52 or something, you'll be fine. But I left at 11:53.
You fool.
And what that meant was what had previously been a tube, then a train, which would have been fine, turned into four separate night buses.
Oh, you poor thing.
How is this global city? Why doesn't it have a train that goes all night? What's going on?
Sometimes you get you put your journey into Google Maps and it presents you this thing which is like an absolute horror. It's like a moment in a horror film, what it presents to you. It's like a sort of the amount of things. There's a little bus, there's a little goat. I've got to go snake back to Sydenham. I've got to catch a 320 snake. But like, it presents these horrific journeys, which is like, you're safer off hunkering down.
But literally, had I left 1 minute earlier, I would have got there in about 54 minutes. As it was like 2 hours of night buses.
That's what happens if you miss that last one.
Yeah.
I used to have that when I lived in Crystal Palace. It was like quite a nice jaunt from London Bridge. But if I've missed that train, the last one, it's a sort of Rosetta Stone of like bullshit that my phone presents me with. Like, and you do think to yourself, maybe just check into a seedy hotel. Did you have that thought? And this start again tomorrow.
I had to keep getting off buses and then sort of getting on a new one. But I'd get off a place I'd never heard of. It'd be like, get off at Plodenham. Yeah. You'd be like, okay. Yeah. Just weird places in South London.
Nine Witches. I've got to change it to Nine Witches.
There seems to be about 20 places called Norbury that I've never heard of.
East Norbury.
Norbury Junction.
Left Norbury.
Norbury Wood. Norbury East. Norbury Southwood. Norbury Green. Norbury South Green.
South Norbury.
Left Norbury. Right Norbury. Middle Norbury. But London, I like to play a game which is make up a London place. Northwood Green. Eastwood. North Church.
Green Pigs.
South Hill. South Hill Wood. North Church Green. You can just combine those words.
Yeah, those all sound totally plausible.
You look at the tube map, there's all these places you've never heard of and they're all called. And when you meet someone from London, first of all, you discuss what novels you've been reading. Then you discuss what novels you've been writing. And then when you ask where someone's from in London, most of the time they'll say, oh, I'm from Eastwood. Oh, right. And you have to, and you don't know what it means because there's just so many bits of London that... You don't know what they are. Eastwood Green, North Eastwood Green, Southwood, Northwood Hill.
Mm-hmm. Plum Hill.
Okay, I'm going to play a game with you called Which of These Are Real Tube Stops?
Okay.
Northwood Hills.
Ooh.
Oh.
Northwood.
When do we answer?
Oh, it's classic. It's
my so you want me to format it at the same time as doing it? You want me to be inventing the quiz while doing the quiz? The quiz happens and then we work out what happened afterwards.
Channel Osman.
I'm going to Channel Osman. Northwood Hills. Northwood. Chorley Wood.
Ooh, that rings a bell.
Pontefract
When
Town.
Do we answer?
I think Chorley Wood, isn't that one of the sort of, you're kind of metropolitan out towards the, like where it becomes Buckingham, like inexplicably it's in Buckinghamshire.
It's the incredible bit of the Metropolitan line where you look out of the window and there's like dolphins and like, yeah. like rhinos and stuff. It's like, what the heck? Yeah, there ought to be a word for the particular weird sort of feeling of nausea you get when you're on a tube train and you're looking out the window and seeing like fields and cows and stuff. It's bizarre. But so, have you got a guess there?
Oh, so out of those four, I'm going for Chorleywood.
Yeah, as being made up?
No, as being real.
No, only one of them was made.
That's your Pontefract. That's the last one you said, the ridiculous one at the end.
Oh, damn, I thought I'd got you with Pontefract Town. I was so...
Pontefract's in Yorkshire, isn't it?
I don't know. I was really excited.
You mastered it before the quiz with your sort of, you know, green bays and sort of North Southington, all that kind of stuff.
North Southington.
Or it's like monument or bank where it's just a thing from history. Do you know what I mean? Gun. Do you know what I mean? Brick. Head.
You're arriving at gun.
But that happens more in France and European countries, doesn't it? When things are named after battles. So you've got no idea. It doesn't help you for where the place is.
Well, you've got Waterloo in the same way. It's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sometimes... Yeah, you know, someone makes a point and like they're generally right. So why the fact that I'm specifically wrong ruins the fact that I'm generally right. You know,
you're trying to be right.
Also, I'm generally right. I mean, generally that is true, but you've pricked it with one little fact prick. You pricked my little balloon, my truth balloon, with one little fact prick.
It's just London's most famous station, that's all.
So here's a good one. So which of these is made up?
Okay.
Headstone Lane, Hatch End, Carpenter's Park, Roxley Bush Green.
Oh, these are quite good. I don't know any of these, I don't think.
One of them's made up.
I mean, I'd love to live in Roxley Bush Green. Yeah, that sounds like a soap from the 80s. And now time to catch up with the residents of Roxley Bush Green.
I think the first one
was made up.
No, Hatch End was real. Carpenter's Park was real.
There was one before Hatch End.
Headstone Lane was real.
Oh, Headstone Lane I thought wasn't real.
But Roxley Bush Green was made up.
Well, well.
So you nearly got it.
Well done.
But I win, so you both have to send me £50. Okay. I accept backs. Is that quite a good game? Should we carry on with this game? Because I'm enjoying it. I don't know about you.
Can I do one for you?
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Which one of these is real?
Okay.
Turkey Brook.
I mean, I know how your imagination works, Ben. You're trying to make up something.
But I'm thinking Carvery.
You're thinking Carvery. All you can think about is your post-pod Carvery. And I know you've hired a little recording booth in the Carvery, so at the end of the recording session, you just press a button, the walls fall down.
Well, I press a button and the gravy falls down like a gunsh tank.
The gravy gunsh tank to you. Because you see gravy... Because your philosophy, isn't it, is that gravy makes everything better. So rather than put gravy on the product, put gravy on you and feed the product through the gravy
the
you.
The gravy layer, yeah.
The gravy layer, don't you?
It's not a bad idea.
It's a really horrible way of doing it.
Okay, so Turkey Brook.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Turkey Hill.
Oh, you devilish dick.
Turkey Street.
What?
Turkey Towers.
Oh.
So, is any one of them made up?
One of them's real.
Oh. Turkey Brook.
Mike?
Turkey Towers.
It's Turkey Street.
Damn. Is it? Wow.
Turkey Street is a station on the Weaver Line of the London Overground in the Bullsmore area in the north of Enfield.
Nicely done.
Situated between Southbury and Theobald's Grove on the Southbury Loop.
That all sounds made up.
It all sounds made up, doesn't it?
Do you want some really boring South West Trains ones?
Yes, please, mate. So is this near you?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
One is made up.
Okay.
Wimpole.
Yeah.
Wharton. Freshford. Netley.
Oh, so hard.
Oh, you've done devilishly good work there.
Thank you.
So was it Wimpole?
Wimpole, Wharton, Freshford, Netley.
I think that Freshford is made up, but sounds like a lovely place. Freshford Dairies. Freshford Dairy Yogurts.
Freshford Correctional Facility. I'm going to go for Wimpole.
I'm afraid it was Wharton.
Oh, damn
you. You could have Wareham. Yeah, absolutely. Wharton. No, sir.
Oh, nicely done.
Thank you.
So you've based the fake one on a real one that's slightly changed one of the syllables.
Yeah.
Okay, here's one of these is made up. Mm-hmm. We're on the central line here. Lofton, Debden, Thadenbois,
ooh,
Nodgeville.
Here's a new game.
Okay.
Which of these will you not find in the concourse of Birmingham New Street Station?
Okay.
Nice.
All bar one. John Lewis. Krispy Kremes. Oliver Bonass.
Dr. Nodge's World of Fun.
There's no way there's a John Lewis in the...
Well, but I think that's the trick. Oh. I reckon there is a John Lewis.
Oh, because it's like linked somehow.
Is it linked to the Bullring Centre?
Yeah.
There's no further information available.
Give us them again.
All bar one. John Lewis. Krispy Kreme. Oliver Bonass.
I'm still going for John Lewis.
I think there is a John Lewis. I think there isn't a... I reckon there isn't an all bar one.
Benjamin has it. He saw through me.
Yes.
Of course there's no John Lewis.
Because you were monobluffing. You weren't double... It was a monobluff, wasn't it?
Not even in the extraordinary concourse that is Birmingham New Street Station. And they've got a Leon, guys.
For the love of God. How are you getting this information?
They've got a Five Guys.
I don't think I've ever been inside an Oliver Bonass. Bonass? Bonass?
Probably Bonass. Don't know.
Yeah, it's it's a high-end gift option shop.
Yeah, yeah.
Lots of picture, sort of rose gold picture frames, that kind of thing.
Okay. Yeah. I get it mixed up with Robert Dias.
It's the opposite of Robert Dias. Robert Dias is...
Isn't that Hoover's?
Robert Dias is Hoover's sort of industrial bleaches.
Yeah.
Galvanized rubber gloves.
Tupperware pots.
Tupperware pots, light bulbs.
Yeah. The other day, I think I sent you a text. I was looking for a Ryman's.
Mm.
And I put in Ryman's to Google Maps, went to the Ryman's, and the Ryman's was inside a Robert Dias.
What?
It was just an area of the Robert Dias, was cordoned off, and it said, this is now Ryman's. You're now in the sort of diplomatic space of Ryman's.
It's very much like Vatican City, isn't it? Yeah. Within Rome. Yeah. It's a separate jurisdiction.
And the Ryman's was just a man stood behind a printer. That's all it was.
Just holding some colourful pencils.
It was a Ryman.
He was a Ryman. Anyway, the Ryman's, the printer didn't work, and so he sent me to a mailboxes, etc.
That's a really weird shop.
Which I do like to go into, because they're always really weird.
I've got a mailboxes, etc. near me. They feel like a kind of, a bit like, do you remember Love Film, the thing where they sent you DVDs in the post?
Oh, yeah. I think I still have two DVDs I have.
Yeah, yeah.
Cinema Paradiso.
And Three Colours Blue.
Yeah, it's always the two foreign films that you never watched.
Yeah. Whereas The Adventures of the Farting Dr. Nodge. The Stinky Adventures of Dr. Nodge in Fart Town. You always watch performance before it's out of the box, don't you? And Into the Nodgeverse, of course.
Mm-hmm.
That's the one where he goes into a parallel universe as he meets another Dr. Nodge.
Dr. Nodge 4, The Fart Farticles.
Yeah. Dr. Nodge Stink Origins.
Yeah.
So I think mailboxes, etc. reminds me of that Love Film company in the sense that it's a kind of company which can exist in between two great phases of technology.
Okay.
Right. So it's a kind of brief, it has a moment. Obviously, there's enough time in there for someone to become a millionaire properly.
Right.
Or for a hedge fund to do really well out of it. But there was the DVD era, there was the analog era, and then there was the digital era we're in now. And in between that, there was something weirdly in between where Love Film was relevant.
Yeah, you'd go on a website to order a DVD. So we were halfway there.
Exactly. Yeah. You didn't want to go down to Blockbusters anymore.
Yeah.
But you could
see. You couldn't stream it.
And mailboxes, etc. I feel it's just like, it's a weird, like, because it's quite a kind of Victorian sounding.
They're very dead spaces. People who aren't familiar, it's just, you just go in and there's lots of, sort of little, lots of locked, tiny lockers and things.
Yeah. It feels quite...
But they can laminate something as well.
They can laminate stuff, they can print stuff. But it's actually, it's really quite useful at the moment, but it's because we're I don't know exactly what eras we're between it, but it's something to do with... I find it mainly useful returning stuff you bought online.
Oh, really?
If you buy a jumper or something, it's the wrong size.
I always find it quite sinister. I could almost feel the sort of... The blackmailing documents oozing out of the little lockers. I feel like it's full of dodgy Polaroids of the elite.
It does have that sort of feel. But it's a really good one-stop shop. If you need to return a jumper that's too big or too small, it's a one-stop shop. Yep. Because they'll print it off for you.
Or blackmail a baron.
Or blackmail a baron.
Or both in the same
visit. Or both at the same time. Or blackmail a baron with a jumper which has a photo of him with, you know, being unfaithful to his wife printed onto it, which is something, again, in the era we're in now, you could organise that from your own bed on your phone and arrive the next day. Couldn't you? And that's the incredible era we live in. But mailboxes, etc. So... Because that's another thing we've discussed, I think, before. But we're not yet in the era where a home printer works. It has not been conquered. You cannot have a home printer. It doesn't work. So you still need a place where they've got an inkjet
with surprisingly long hours, opening hours.
With surprisingly long hours, where they can they can print your label, stick it on your thing, and nodge it in the post.
But also, whenever you go in there, there's always someone there. Sending like an office chair to Argentina for some reason, and you think, why are you doing this? There's always some strange parcels.
Again, it's been hollowed out and it's absolutely full of euros.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
But also that's because we're still at the we are in this interzone where everything's kind of online, everything's virtual, everything's digital, but at the same time, you still need stuff delivered physically. You still need to wrap stuff in brown in Manila. I mean, Manila.
Yeah.
As a product, you know, as a substance, the Manila envelope is. Probably never been doing so well. Brown tape, those things, little transparent plastic bits of plastic bags that you put a bit of paper in and stick to the front of a box. All that stuff is still massive because we're not at the 3D printing stage yet. Once 3D printing is universal, Mike won't even need to travel around the country to do a gig.
Yeah, I can just print out my own Tunnock's tea cake here, can't I?
You can print out your own Tunnock's tea cake here. But also, you can print out a 3D mic. You can email yourself essentially to Glasgow. They print out a 3D mic in Glasgow. You just have to make sure you don't do anything in the meantime in Exeter.
Hmm.
But Mike, that 3D mic can do your gig remotely through pre-recorded MP3s embedded in its cranium. And just at the end of the gig, they just have to make sure that mic is executed.
Mm-hmm.
And that you haven't earned money independently in Exeter, because then that's a tax. Then you create a tax problem, which is, can you be taxed twice? Can the same person be taxed twice at the same time? Do you know what I mean? So what happens is, at the end of the gig, everyone has to execute Mike Wozniak, which is actually, luckily, is what they want to do at the end of one of your gigs anyway.
Oh,
very nice. Let's have a good time. Everyone, come on. We're all having a nice time. Yeah?
Oh, very good.
And they bring their own hammers, don't they, normally, anyway?
Oh, yeah, usually, yeah. I'm one of the few acts that does pre-merch. I sell hammers on a trestle table outside the gig before they go in. Because they know they're going to want to use them.
Yeah.
Let's read your emails.
Yes, please.
When you send an email, you must give thanks to the postmasters that came before.
Good morning, postmaster. Anything for me?
Just some old shit.
When you send an email, this represents progress. Like a robot shoeing a horse.
Give me your health.
Beautiful horse.
This email is from Jack.
Thank you, Jack. Hello.
It's kind of hard to get into this, but Jack has created and illustrated a three-bean salad role-playing game in the style of Dungeons and Dragons that is totally playable. I will include a link to this in the show notes, and if you're the kind of person that sort of enjoys that kind of thing, then get involved. I mean, it's incredible. I don't quite know where to start with in terms of describing it.
Well, what's the kind of goal of the game? I'm interested to know. Because it might help me with my goal in my own life.
Yeah.
I could maybe... What is the goal? What does he think of as being the goal of being a bean?
So the game is sort of marshalled by a benevolent autocrat.
Okay.
Mike Wozniak.
Lovely.
Who sort of sort of runs the game.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the dungeon master.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. There you go. Then you have to name your bean and choose whether it's a provincial dad or a metropolitan elite.
Okay, yep. Good.
That makes a difference to like your kind of stats as a character.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Then you calculate your Bonjamin stat.
Okay.
Then you choose your bean's PhD field using a dice.
Yeah, yeah.
If you roll a one, it's polar science. Two, Hamley's magic. Three, panini running. Four, Gorp core. Five, egg carton geometry. And six, robotics. Okay. Then you have to equip your bean. You roll a dice. One, a stoking cudgel. Two, a sword or ham from one of the great sword or ham cultures.
Yep.
Three, a baguette loaded with armor-piercing brie. Four, an American pink sludge nozzle.
Yeah.
Five, a miniature trebuchet painted by one of the Gallagher brothers. That's a reference to something I can't even remember. Six, a snooker ball in a sock.
Very good.
Are there dice or die?
There's die, yeah. You roll the dice to see where you begin. Roller one, you're in a brunch at Pret-a-Manger. Two, you're at Diamond Harbour. Three, you're at the Dragon Soup Cafe. Four, you're in Bremen. Five, you're in Slimbridge Wetland Centre. And six, you're in the biggest freestanding concrete dome of its size. It's great.
That sounds brilliant.
That's superb. Thank you.
Anyway, I'll put a link to it in the show notes if you're interested. It's
Thank you very much indeed.
It's a great bit of work.
Brilliant.
This is from Nat.
Hello, Nat.
Dear Ben, regrettably, I have to issue a bollocking.
Uh-oh.
Accessing listener bollocking. Bollocking loading. Bollocking loaded.
Regarding your claim that the orientation of a horse's limbs has symbolic value and symbolically conveys how the doubtless distinguished rider met their demise, this is flat nonsense.
Oh, no.
The kind of nonsense I expect from Henry, but I've always imagined you to be above. I like that a lot. Well, do I accept that bollock or
You're
not?
Just saying it's flat nonsense, but not saying what it is. But they're not giving us an alternative.
No, I wanted more. I wanted the origins of the myth. Or so, I wanted more. Maybe it's because I like the fact so much.
Yes.
I wanted to be replaced by something.
So it's hard to say bollocking accepted because it's like...
It's a sort of quite old school knuckle fight of a bollock. Sort of, isn't it? It's just like, it's pretty like...
It is what it is.
It's just...
Because anyone can email in and just say that's nonsense, right?
Exactly.
But they need to back it up with a bit of something.
Yeah.
Okay, Nat, you might. It doesn't look like that's landed. Maybe, Nat, you can.
Because normally you'd want to supply some additional information or something.
Yeah, which means for me, that's a reflecto bollock.
Oh,
yeah, I agree.
Reflecto bollock.
Thanks for everyone who signed up at our Patreon. Patreon.com/threebeansalad is the place to go. You can sign up at various tiers, but if you sign up at the Sean Bean tier, you get a shout out from Mike from the Sean Bean Lounge, where Mike spent all of last week.
I did, indeed. It was spectacular.
Yeah, it was a weird one, wasn't it? Because it was all sponsored by Ridley Scott, and it was the Gladiator 2 themed CGI baboon fight.
It was. Thank you, Benjamin. And here's my report.
It was the Gladiator 2 CGI baboon fight, sponsored by Ridley Scott last night in the virtual reality dueling suite at the Sean Bean Lounge, with Rowan Smith finally getting a chance to road test his hyper-realistic VR head and body sets, now with added stuff being drilled into your brain and spine. Josh Yates, James Melton, Chris in Japan, and Groovy Isaac opted for hand-to-hand mode and were torn into such small pieces it looked like a shaken-up snow globe that was full of bits of bloke. Holly Donahue, Dr. Sarah Rock Bison, and Kit Preston, on the other hand, opted for poultry shears and to work as a team, and spatchcocked a Vanguard baboon in record time. aware revenge would be in the offing, they quickly cleared the field, allowing Daniel White, Ocean Edwards, Danny Chapman and Craig Holden to step in and take the brunt of the baboonic wrath. They were shaved, flayed, minced and moulded into meat mannequins to be used in the training of the next generation of fighting baboons. Becky Heaton and Grace might have had some success with their weighted net and trident combo, but they were completely ignored by the baboons as Dolly Hall was running around the outer edge of the melee slapping baboons on the arse with a slotted spatula. This came to an abrupt end when Emma A and Kay Knowles shot out of an attack flume in the two halves of a pantomime CGI war tiger. The tiger knocked the spatula out of Dolly's grip, forcing her to persuade the baboons that she had been directed to act by the spatula, which led to the spatula being sent to the firing squad. Meanwhile, Slady, Ryan Cliver and Nathan Thorner tried a prison yard style tactic of going for the strongest fighter first and attacked the CGI tiger. It was an unfortunate bit of blue on blue, which in hindsight could have been solved with dialogue, but instead ended with a clear 3-0 to the tiger. Liam Jones, meanwhile, tried the long game honey trap style, attempting to woo baboons one by one before inviting them on a coastal walking holiday, at which point he intended to push them off a cliff. At the time of writing, he has been ghosted by no less than 16 baboons and got off with a single macaque, whose means of entrance into the lounge remains unclear. Brad Smoley and Edward went for a blunter approach by covering a Hyundai i10 with glue and quite big splinters and driving it straight into the fracas. Baboons, of course, are known to be able to leap 3 stacked Hyundai i10s from standing, so the plan was as ill thought through as it was unsuccessful, and the two merely ploughed through bean loungers, ruining the evenings and trousers of Luke Boyan, Guy Bronze, Benjamin Sleep, Kieran Bennett, Fausti Arsoles, Duncan Wright and Ben. Sebastian Kreutzer and Mike Downing took advantage of the chaos to attempt to steal Ridley Scott's refreshments trestle table, it being the same trestle table as seen in G.I. Jane, Director's Cut Trestle Table Edition. Wanting the trestle table for themselves, Ruby Louise Hillinger and Charlie Jones smeared Sebastian and Mike in reptile egg paste, had Alex Hum ring the halftime bell, and looked on as the paste was devoured, men included, on water biscuits with a sprinkling of poppy seeds. At this point, Ridley Scott himself intervened, wheeled in on a CGI barrow by Jack Knights and AI Every Day. The three of them switched out the trestle table for a fake CGI trestle table and made good their escape. Tragically, this switch wasn't spotted by Joe Duffy, who attempted to shield himself from an Empress baboon with the CGI trestle table, and found the trestle table was merely absorbed into the Empress baboon, making her 50% larger and giving her the qualities of a trestle table. By the time she finished with him, Joe was more buffet than man. And what a buffet, agreed Sally Darby and Amy, who'd been able to enjoy watching the whole event without being disturbed by a single baboon, being dressed as they were as a crowned eagle, the baboon's natural predator, and as a trombone, respectively. Thanks all.
Okay, that's the show. We'll finish off with a version of our theme tune sent in by one of you guys.
Yes, please.
And this one is from Charlie. Charlie writes, here is a cover of the main theme by my dad in the style of pioneering Viennese composer of the early 20th century and father of atonalism, Arnold Schoenbein.
Lovely. Thank you. Brilliant. Much. Thanks for listening. Cheerio.
Bye. Goodbye.